get the meeting started. The House Finance Committee meeting, March 16th, times 145. With us today is Representative Moses, representing Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, myself, Co-Chairman Meyer, Vice Chairman Stoltz, Representative Hawker, and I think Representative Petula is here somewhere. She'll be back. Okay. This afternoon's schedule is a pretty aggressive schedule, and I would like to take would like to stop at 3:30, which is our normal time, give everybody a little bit of a break before we start the operating budget at 4 o'clock. Today, operating budget, we're taking public testimony from Anchorage. Of course, tomorrow will be Fairbanks and Juneau, and Saturday will be the other communities throughout the state. So first, if there's nothing else coming before the committee at this time, our first bill up is House Bill 441. We have the sponsor and his staff here. And before we get started, I will need a motion to adopt a CS.
Mr. Chairman, I move that CS for House Bill 441, 24LS1295-F lookup. 38060 adopt as a working document.
Okay, any objections? Seeing none, CS is before us. Representative Roper.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for taking up this very important legislation. In a nutshell, what this bill does, it conforms all the statutes and updates them for the implementation of the wellness or therapeutic court model in the state of Alaska for the DUI or alcohol-related courts. This is going an extraordinarily successful program. We reached two days ago were visited by some outside experts that acknowledge the tremendous savings that this program can make to our general fund budget. Their testimony was it had a 10-to-1 savings ratio from what the hard dollars to ultimate general fund type savings. I believe that even the cursory level of review of our pilot programs we've had underway for some 5 years in the state yields at least a 2-to-1 savings. So this is probably the most important, along with the youth court system in this state, budget saving device that we've come up with. But Mr. Chairman, I submit to you the most important element here is not only the savings of the bottom line, it's the savings of lives that we're able to effectuate by successful completion of these programs. I'm very pleased to have been part of the initial early funding of this, even starting being part of the starting of the first program here in Juneau. And I just wanted to make a comment. I'll turn the for any questions on the bill over to my staff. Heather Nabriga here. We also have testimony from the Mr. Woolberg court system and the Deputy Attorney General of this part. But I would just make one comment, sir, about this being the Finance Committee. This bill has a zero fiscal note because it's based on the prior authorized expenditures under what was HB 72, the initial, 172, the initial DUI felony court levels, and subsequent legislation that's authorized the positions. Now, there has been some discussion about the use of additional National Highway Safety Fund monies, and we are gladly recipients of the appropriation of some $669,000 from the National Highway Safety Transportation Funds as a result of the adoption of the mandatory seatbelt law. But what has perhaps caused some confusion is we need to do a local state match of $344,000 to be able to use that appropriation. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, there's been issues in terms of the Public Defender's Office, the Department of Law, corrections, some in the courts, and other issues of expense, which are basically part of the general fund appropriations. And much of the newer monies that will be coming in will be able to establish programs in Fairbanks and Ketchikan, which will be new programs for the state of Alaska. And with that, I'd ask if the committee had any questions about the legislation and look forward to the further testimony.
Thank you. Very good. Any questions for the sponsor? Seeing none.
Thank you very much.
You got a zero fiscal. We had to just move the bill. Did you have more testimony? Go ahead, Rick.
This doesn't actually set up a separate court.
Through the chair, Representative Weirach, what it does, there actually are, the program itself envisions a court within a court or a type of process within the district and a court and a superior court levels. It also sets up a statutory framework for example, penalties and what some flexibility that the judges have to mete out sanctions and grants of concessions, if you will. To the participants in the program as long as they're meeting the requirements of the program. So there's a parallel and a distinction between the traditional statutory sanctions that would be meted out by the courts and participation in this program. It's a carrot and stick arrangement.
Okay. Representative?
Yeah, just a... Not sure when to ask this question, but I was reading the Alaska budget report this morning that there was some changes made in the court budget subcommittee, and I'm wondering if there's any correlation with what this bill is trying to do along with the changes in the budget of the courts.
Through the chair, Representative Jewell, this bill per se is not affected because it's zero fiscal note. However, in order for the program to succeed, it needs the support not only from the policy-wise from this from the legislature, but also financially. I think we're able right now to leverage substantial dollars through use of minimal GF funds to federal dollars and to expand the program. But we still need to make sure we have that support. And we have had some historic problems culturally with some of our departments and some of our agencies that haven't supported this concept. But we're breaking those barriers down, I think making excellent success and progress to make sure we can expand and grow the whole system in the state. There is, yeah, so yes and no.
Thank you, Mr. Trump.
Or no and yes.
Okay. Very good. Any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Representative Roper. Ms. Noberger, did you want to say
anything? Oh, no, I was just here for
a question. I've been practicing the last name, though. Okay. Yes, thank you. Okay. Ms. Parks, did you want to testify on the board? Okay. Just a question? Very good. Doug Wilver. First up.
Okay. I'm available,
available for questions. Good. And Ms. Portia Parker, questions? Okay, she's not here, so no questions for her. Okay, we have others, I believe, online for questions. Ronald Taylor with the Department of Health and Social Services and Janet McCabe, Partners for Progress. Okay, any other, anybody else who wants to testify on this, either here or online? Okay, seeing none, public testimony is closed. Questions for the sponsor? Okay, seeing none. Representative Foster.
Yes, sir.
Representative Foster, we have four new fiscal notes.
I know. I like this bill. I move that we move HB 441 out of the Finance Committee with all of their attached fiscal notes and with individual recommendations.
Okay. There's four new fiscal notes, the court system, Department of Corrections, Public Safety, and Department of Administration, Public Defender, and they're all zero.
They're part of my motion.
Okay, yes. Okay, they're all zero fiscal notes. Any objections? Okay, seeing none, the bill passes out of committee. Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
That's a good program.
Is that another fine bill, Mr. Chairman?
Another fine bill.
Yeah.
Okay, on the record we have Representative Petula, Representative Weirach. Was here. It's hard to keep track of you guys. Representative Schnell is now here. Okay. Representative Weirach, you changed.
That's
what gravity does.
All right.
Senate
Bill 157, regulatory cost charges. Let's see. What are we doing here? We need, again, a motion to adopt it, right? Committee substitute.
I move that committee adopt House CS for CS for Senate Bill number 157. 24-GS-1138-SI, Lane, dated 3806, is the committee's working document for CS.
Okay, any objections for that blank committee substitute force? Seeing none, we have that for force. And with us today, we have, I have the practice room.
All right,
Kate Geyer. Tony Price, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Both of the RCA, Regulatory Commission of Alaska. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Finance House Committee, Senate Bill 157, as modified by the House, will provide a funding mechanism for the purchase and implementation of data systems that will allow regulated utilities and pipeline companies in Alaska access to a secure web-based RCA portal through which all of their day-to-day regulated business transactions, you might be familiar with tariffs, cost of power, CPE, rate cases, PCE filings, we've heard a lot about those this year, annual filings, and docket filings could be performed electronically. The project was evaluated by a user utility committee and went through a public process at the RCA in 2004 and early 2005, and is significantly supported by the utilities as a very positive step forward for the regulatory environment and the regulatory burden for the state of Alaska. Senate Bill 157 will increase utility costs for consumers, which I know is a matter of concern for you, by approximately $1 a year. So because you're able to spread the cost over a very, very large base, the cost for any one ratepayer is not significant. So I respectfully request that you pass this measure. I think that it's a good policy for Alaska, and I'm certainly appreciative of all the work that various members of this committee has put into understanding and evaluating this bill. So thank you very much.
Good. Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Price, you're just available for questions?
I have nothing to add.
Nothing to add? Okay. Perfect. Any questions? Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might, in order to raise a question regarding the fiscal note?
Yes, sure. Go ahead.
Just a question on fund source here. ADA receipts, can you explain that as a fund source to me?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking for the fiscal note that would say ADA receipts. If it says ADA receipts through the chair, it's actually RCC receipts.
So if I might, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to propose an amendment to the fiscal note, and I'm going to allow it to be a conceptual amendment for whatever correction might be, but it would be to change the fund source from ADA receipts to RCC receipts.
Very good. Good catch, Representative Hawker. Let's save that, though, and we'll get ready to either move the bill or...
Excuse me, sir. Do not mean to get ahead of you.
Yeah, very good. We do have several people online to testify. If there's no other questions for the sponsor, I guess you're not technically the sponsor, but for Ms. Jard and Mr. Price. Okay, no questions. Let's go on then to Ted Monoski with ACS. Okay, that's not Ted. Is Ted online, or is he here? Or?
I am here, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, there you are. All right, go ahead, Ted.
Thank you. Well, I apologize for making my name so difficult for you to pronounce. It's been happening for a long time.
It's not you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Ted Monenski. I'm the Director of Regulatory Affairs for Alaska Communication Systems. I'm here this afternoon to speak to SB 157, the RCC bill. ACS has carefully reflected on SB 157 and the RCA's stated intent for seeking to increase RCC funding. ACS is supportive of the RCA's plans to augment its internal case management systems and strongly supports the Commission's plans to create an electronic filing capability and enhanced searchable databases. Speaking as a former administrator with the Alaska court system and an executive director with the former Alaska Public Utilities Commission, and most recently representing public utilities before the RCA, I can offer you firsthand testimony of the value of automating the operations of these agencies. ACS's experience with the Federal Communications System is a case in point. The FCC has implemented tools such as its eDocs system, the electronic filing and public access system, and various FCC searchable databases, which demonstrates the usefulness and efficiency gains that these tools make available, and further underscores the importance of developing and implementing similar mechanisms at the state level. By vastly improving efficiencies, these operational systems will provide benefits to the utilities that are regulated by the RCA and to the customers that are served by these utilities. To the extent that RCC funding is inadequate to complete this project, however, ACS is concerned that it may result in certain aspects, certain modules of the system that are either delayed or perhaps never implemented. Most important of these concerns is the ability to do electronic filings and to create searchable databases. At the same time that we're concerned about having access to these important tools and the efficiency gains that are associated with them, ACS is extremely concerned about the financial impacts on consumers of an increase in RCC surcharges. In the highly competitive markets that ACS serves, any rate increase is something that has to be carefully evaluated, and an increase in RCC surcharge would be part of that evaluation. To offset the impact of increased RCC surcharges, ACS recommends that the legislature and the RCA work together to create a real return on ratepayers' investment of short-term RCC increases. ACS does not have a specific proposal to offer, but believes that one approach would be that once the short-term funding increase produces the project dollars needed, and I'll stop for a moment and say that ACS does support an increase in the RCC cap to 0.9% for 2 years to accomplish this. And once that has occurred, the RCC cap might actually be set lower than the current 0.7% for some period of time to allow consumers to be repaid the dollars that they have fronted for this important project. ACS urges the legislature and the commission to consider this option, to work out a downstream result that allows the project to be properly scoped and implemented, and at the same time produces financially equitable results for the people who are writing the check. That would be ACS's customers and the legislature's constituents. That concludes my comments. I thank you for the opportunity to speak to SB 157, and I'm available for your questions.
Okay. Very good. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Bill Saab with AT&T. Again, I don't know if you're here in Juneau or if you're testifying online. Bill, are you online?
Yes, I am. I'm here in Anchorage.
All right. Go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is William Sope, and I'm with the Anchorage law firm of Ashburn & Mason. I have practiced law before the RCA and its predecessor, the APUC, since approximately 1985. I'm here today on behalf of AT&T Alascom, which strongly supports SB 157. AT&T Alascom believes that the proposed approximately $3 million increase in the regulatory cost charge is the most reasonable means of raising the funds necessary to upgrade the RCA's computer systems. Our understanding is that the additional funds would be administered by a users committee made up of a broad spectrum of utility, industry, as well as public interest representatives, whose job would be to acquire and implement new and substantially improved computer systems that will allow for, one, electronic submission of all filings made at the Commission, two, improved internal tracking of open dockets, And three, creation of a searchable database of all documents on file at the commission. From AT&T Alascom's perspective, these would all be major improvements that would greatly improve the agency's efficiency and enhance the consistency and quality of its orders. Just as important, and particularly from a practitioner and a utility point of view, it would save utilities substantial amounts of time, effort, and money by making filing and research easier and less time-consuming. Alascom would like to see this project undertaken as soon as possible, and if possible, all at the same time. It's concerned that if the project is broken into pieces or implemented in stages, there is some risk that momentum will be lost, and perhaps even a risk that the various upgrades will not be properly coordinated and integrated with each other. Like Mr. Meninsky and ACS, AT&T Alascom is concerned that the ratepayers' money be spent wisely and that any surplus that's left over after this project should be able to be flowed back to the ratepayers who've contributed the funds through future reductions in the RCC. For these reasons and with these conditions, AT&T Alascom urges you to pass SB 157 and to ensure that the RCC increase is sufficient to fund the entire project that the user committee has developed. Thank you, and I am available for questions. I will submit the text of my remarks to the staff here for the record.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Sapi. Okay. You do have our fax number?
I can get it.
Okay. Well, if there's staff right there, you can just leave it with them.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for your testimony. Okay, we'll go on now to Dan DeGraff with NSTAR.
I'm here in Anchorage also.
Okay.
Compliment you on the pronunciation.
I got lucky.
Well, Mr. Hawker there probably could have helped you, but...
Yes, Mr. Chairman, in the interest of full disclosure, Mr. Dick Rep and I were once CPAs together with Pricewaterhouse.
Oh, okay.
A very, very long time ago in a time and space far, far away, right, Mike?
Our apologies.
Yeah, we won't hold that against you.
We've both gone on to different lives, I shall we say.
Okay, very good.
My name is Dan Dick Graff. I am the Treasurer and Manager of Finance and Rates for NSTAR Natural Gas Company. I've dealt with regulatory matters at the RCA and its predecessor, the APUC, for NSTAR for over 20 years. NSTAR provides natural gas service to over 123,000 customers in South Central Alaska, including 11,000 on the Kenai Peninsula and 21,000 in the Mat-Su. We calculate that is approximately 337,000 Alaskans. As we like to say, it's our job to keep over half the state warm, which we're trying to do today, even though it's a lot colder here than it is in Juneau. NSTAR supports the RCA's initiative to update...
Maybe not today. Or even the last couple of days.
Are you guys you got that cold wind that we've had up here?
I believe we do, yes.
My condolences.
That's winter leaving.
It has been an interesting March. NSTAR supports the RCA's initiative to update its information service systems and to fund it with a proposed two-year limited increase in the regulatory cost charge. We can see the efficiencies that the proposed systems would bring to the RCA and for the utilities it regulates. The advantages already listed by my predecessors in testimony here, but the tracking of cases and the cost of those cases, researching the precedents by the RCA utilities and the public, making information available faster and easier, and saving on storage, paper, and filing. As a result, the ratepayers who ultimately pick up the tab for all of this will save and get better regulation. It's important to NSTAR that the RCA have enough money to get on with the job and to do it right. There's utility participation in defining the project and all the aspects of the project, and from personal experience with computer conversions, both in this life and in my earlier life, they always end up being longer and more complicated than you ever imagined. We're just completing a project where we have been scanning and putting into a database 40-some years of engineering records so that we can easily pull up information on any location we serve, not unlike the information that the Commission wants to do to track in comments, orders, and filings in all the cases it wants to serve. It's a long road, but it is a very, very helpful one once you get there. I thank you for letting me testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions? How about from fellow CPA, Representative Harper? I guess you're okay. Thank you.
No, sir, but it's always good to hear from Mr. Dickrath.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dickrath, for your testimony today and for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
We're going to, we're going to come back here to Juneau now. Mr. Posey.
Okay.
Can we open the table, Miranda?
I'll be sure.
Don't worry. Well, there's actually room there for all of you.
Hi,
yeah, go ahead. No reason for you guys to be all scrunched up there. Watch out for your ears and fingers.
We like to be close to our regulated utilities.
Sure. What have family here? Go ahead. Oh, by the way, there's donuts in the back. Compliments of Representative Jewell. His cell phone went off. And so if you do have a cell phone and it's on, it can't be costly. So you may want to turn your cell phones off. But anyway, welcome to the donuts.
Thank my wife, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, wife. She called you, right? Thank Mrs. Jewell for the donuts. Okay, Mr. Posey.
This afternoon, in the interest of time, I'll be short because basically this sounds like a train that's moving down the railroad. Jim Posey, first manager of Municipal Light and Power, our Anchorage, we basically support the SB 157 and as all the other utilities have said before, for all those great reasons that we'd like to be able to work with the Commission, file papers. Usually when I have filings before the Commission, I spend 15-20 minutes signing documents because of how many you really have to file. Being able to get to electronic filing would help all of us with all of the time that we have. And as a former commissioner, I know how important it is for us to be able to maintain and get good data to the commission. But like all the other speakers, being able to do it all at the same time is very important. And therefore, the slight burden on all of our ratepayers is small, given the impact it will have to our ability to work with our regulators to get answers from them, the like that I've been able to experience in the last 2 years from this particular commission, because when there's 15 minutes, 15 days, 30 days, 45 days, we actually have been able to work with the commission. Orders have come out on time. And for us, that has saved us and our ratepayers a great deal of money. Available for questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Posey. Any questions? Yeah, it's is that here, sir?
it's
days like today where we appreciate our utility companies keeping us warm. Thank you very much. Although I don't know if MLP quite reaches down to Juneau yet, but almost. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, doesn't even take most of Anchorage.
Yeah. Let's see. Show that we still have Jim Rowe online with the ATA. Is that correct? Jim Rowe? Okay. Jim, are you with us?
I am, sir.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're sitting in the back of the room. We have to come up here to the mic. That's why we seem to be tardy. Okay. I'm Jim Rowe. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Telephone Association, and I'm here on behalf of the membership in support of the increase in the RCC charge. For the reasons that my predecessors in testimony today have given, the Alaska Telephone Association is rural telecommunications companies in the state. And we have found, as the FCC has gone to electronic filing, this has been an awesome savings to us. For the RCA to have the same type electronic filings would also be a really very functional upgrade. I polled my members in general because I work for a board of directors, and they have, as you might suspect, sometimes different opinions. I asked them what they wanted to say to this committee today, and somewhat unusually, they all came in agreement on it, in support of the legislation and in support of the increased efficiency we'll see with the commission. If we're able to get the electronic upgrades we're talking about with the increase to 0.9% in the RCC, I'd like to read to you, if I may, a message that came in response when I sent this out electronically. And this comes from, to me, and it's a very informal note, from Greg Berberick, who's the CEO of Matanuska Telephone Association. And it says, and it's in regard to this, Jim, I was just in a meeting this morning with Ken Barr, who's a member of his regulatory crew, where we were discussing our difficulty in keeping a filing system of all the orders and such from the FCC and RCA. Some we keep in hard copy, others on electronic databases. He opined that if the FCC and the RCA had good electronic data storage and retrieval, that it would significantly unburden our group. He said that the FCC is getting there, and he was reviewing whether he needed to keep any hard or electronic copies of FCC stuff. The one downside he mentioned was the ability to retrieve really old documents and how long they would maintain the files. So if part of the Commission's plan includes electronic filings, data storage, and retrieval, I can't imagine why anyone would not support it from an efficiency standpoint, as well as easy access. And that's the end of his comments to me. I would suggest that after this electronic system would be implemented, the RCA, the staff of the Commission, would find it very effective. I think that the utilities would find it extraordinarily effective and efficient, and that would bring a real savings to our customers. I would be happy to entertain comments or questions. Those are all my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rowe. We do have a question from Representative Stoltz.
Thank you. Good to hear from you, Mr. Rowe.
Thank you.
Is there some point, as you represent a lot of cooperatives, where there's a point where you get to the accumulated different government and regulatory charges, and there's a slew of them, whether they're federal tax access charges? Is there a point where they might even, say on a telephone charge, might get to a point where they're more than half of the basic service rate? Is there some type of public policy point where you might suggest it gets to be a concern?
There are certainly, even on Jim Rowe's telephone bill, a lot of these line charges come in. And about half of the companies are co-ops that I'm here representing today. They're on all the bills, whether they're a co-op or a stock company or a municipal company. And they've gotten to a significant amount. I think the universal service charge went up to 10.8 or 10.9% for this quarter I just saw. These are breakout charges that we didn't used to see on our phone bills. There certainly were costs there. I'm not sure that the amount of the check that a customer writes is any higher than it ever was. And one of the issues we have dealt with in the last couple of years is a network access fee that customers are seeing on there, and it might be represented as a NAF, N-A-F. I'm not sure. I don't look close enough at my own bill, I guess, now. But essentially, it's there, and perhaps your long-distance charges within the state have been reduced. That was one of the things we advocated before the RCA at the time. I don't represent any long-distance companies, so I can't say if that's the case. Are we going to see the charges someday being a more significant percentage of the bill? I don't know. Some speculation is maybe telephone will be free, along with all the other things that you're going to pay for. And I'll call it local telephone being free. I'm not sure that's the case, but when you have bundling, for instance, on your cell phones now, it seems like long-distance phone calls to some areas are free. I assure you they're not. Somebody's paying for them somewhere, and it might be you on just your monthly charges. It's really just a description of the charges on there. I've probably stepped all around the answer you were hoping for.
Well, we'll have many opportunities to converse, and I know long distance is a lot cheaper than it used to be. I have a hard time talking still with some relatives outside in more than a couple of syllables because hurry up and say hello to your aunt, and it costs 80 cents a minute or whatever. It used astronomical, so we've come a long way. So, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Stoltz, any other questions?
Representative Couture, question?
Not for this witness.
All right, just hold on just a second, please. Is there any other, anyone else who wanted to testify online? Here in Juneau? Okay, then we'll go ahead and close the public testimony. I don't have any amendments at this time. Questions for the sponsor, Representative Couture?
Thank you. My questions are about sections 3 and 6, the retroactivity and the section discussing the liability for damages. And I don't think it does. My family has a lawsuit against NEA, and I just want to be real sure that we don't have a conflict going on. So the first question is, it appears that the retroactivity deals only with damages that might have incurred after December 1st, 04. I just want to be real sure that that's right.
Through the chair, Representative Petrola, that is correct.
That's good. So I don't have a conflict, so I'll go on. And the second question is, so will the state, should there be any damages, I guess there's a case ongoing, will the state then become liable, and is that an automatic? I don't want to see any plaintiffs left on hold by this. I mean, I want, you know, to be sure that if there are damages, someone is paying them. Is that how it will work? We won't have to maybe amend the complaint, but that's it. How will it work?
Through the chair, Representative Kurtula, this amendment resulted from an RCA order which required NEA to provide service to the Alaska Enterprise along its TLS line in Missoula, Matanuska Valley. The reason this provision was added to the bill was because NEA is the only utility along the transmission line that is using its own facilities to provide intertime service. Further, the RCA ordered the utility to provide the service at 138 kilovolts, and the utility's design was for a lower power production amount level. So I feel that this particular section of the bill is in the public interest because it exempts MEA from liability should an event be caused as a direct result of running the line at 138 kV.
That explains what it does, but what about the plaintiffs if there is a lawsuit, who ultimately pays if, you know, if the case is found to be on
chair, the state of Alaska has assumed the liability.
Okay, and there won't be any, Mr. Chair, there's no sovereign immunity, there's no waiver that will be put forward.
Through the chair, that language is not in the bill.
Go ahead.
It's not in the bill, but I want to be certain that that isn't going to happen.
Through the chair, when this bill was brought before Senate Finance last year, it was evaluated by a legislative audit budget, it was evaluated by AEA, and it was evaluated by the Attorney General. And there was no discussion at the time at all of the possibility that there would be a plaintiff that wouldn't be able to recover.
Continue.
I think what you're saying is that, no, that won't be asserted. But you didn't say it directly, so I think that probably I could follow up with the Attorney General's office later and just be positive that that's what the case is, that it might be asserted. Thank you.
Representative Stoltz, did you have a follow-up on Representative Petula's question?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Very good. Representative Schroeder?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Gard, we're looking at this proposed information system, and I've heard different reports. I haven't had a chance to speak with anyone with the RCA, but can you tell us, have you already went out for bid on this project? Have you looked at the type of information system that you're going to use? Are you somewhat convinced that this amount of money is going to cover the system that you're proposing to provide? And I'm trying to get a little bit more information on the system itself, and I don't know if you can give us that information or not.
Through the chair, Representative Chenault, yes. The system is comprised of three primary components, and it's like a concentric circle. The center of the circle is the ability of, it has to be built first, and it is a case management system that's electronic, and that is the portion which will operate within the RC. Surrounding that circle, the center, is a content management system, which will is projected to be able to maintain data for a goal of 7 years, so that utilities and pipeline companies will be able to research their data online, and we will hold it online for 7 years. There's not a lot of flexibility within those two concentric circles. The outer layer of that is the ability of the utilities and pipeline companies to use the web interface, to access the data that they want, to file with the RCA, and to eliminate the paper-intensive process that currently exists. When we were originally proposing this idea and concept to the Public Utilities and Pipelines in the state of Alaska, I estimated a $1.5 million budget. The utilities, during public testimony and public hearing, particularly Chugach, led comments that said, we don't think that's enough. We think it's a $3 million project, or we don't know how much it is. So we would like you to meet with us and to help. We want to help you decide what you need. We, at that time, in November of 2004, formed a utility user committee and had a number of different utilities on the user committee. We went through a budgeting process and analysis, which was very, very loose. It was really conceptual. And we created a range of highs and lows. To build the system that we talked about with the concentric circles, our range was somewhere between $890,000 and $2.2 million. And we used $1.5 million as an estimate for that process. What we then added on was, and what isn't in that concentric circle and will not be in this funding, is the ability of the utilities and pipeline companies to look at their old data and do any searchable research on the old data that resides within the RCA. Currently, the RCA systems are such that they take pictures of data. So every one of the 200 pages of data that's filed with the RCA, 200,000 annually, is taken a picture. And that picture is just not searchable. You can't look at it, you can't find it. So the utilities expressed a desire to have, and you've heard that, I think, today, the capability of going back in time and converting that to a searchable data. This funding will not provide that project. This funding will build satisfactorily, I believe, a complete ability to do electronic filing, but will not allow that type of filing, that type of research to be performed.
So you're comfortable with your number then?
I was comfortable with the $1.5 million to build the core system, okay. And maybe, I still am today.
And maybe I kind of thought I heard the gentleman from ACS and possibly the one from AT&T talking about needing, they felt that you might need more. Now, maybe it does deal with with this other part that you're not, that's not going to be tied in with your case management program. But so I'm just trying to get my hands wrapped around it and see if in a year you may come back and say we didn't have enough and we need more.
Right. Through the chair, Representative Chenault, the part that you hear talked about with utilities is the second phase, we call it, of the project, which we also ranged in cost because we don't know, from a low of $500,000 to a high of $1 million or more to convert the data to searchable. It's going through all of the RCA's records. I think the projected time was 96 or 99 in converting that data. That was in Senate bill that was passed by the Senate committee, but it is not present here. There is every opportunity for the utilities to come back and request in the future that the RCC be increased to accommodate that. It is not likely that the RCA will come back and do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Kelly.
Just in fairness to the commission, I think there is a potential that they will need to come back on that second phase, and that we will maybe determine with the utilities that that's appropriate. I met with Commissioner Baird on that issue, and I think just so when we get here next year, we're not saying, well, wait a minute, this was a one time and it ends. So as someone who met with the commissioner to try to move that from 3 years down until we get scope, schedule, and budget and tighten it up a bit, I think it's fair to say that certainly my discussions with you would indicate that there might be, once it's scoped out and you've got a good handle on it, there might be another step. And I think that's what you're saying. I just want to make sure the committee understands that we may well come back based on good solid data and ask that charge be extended if it looks like it's going to.
Through the chairman, Representative Kelly, we would look to the utilities to come back to you for that bill. The RCA is going to be in the middle of sunset and would not likely be asking the governor to sponsor a bill like that during that process. But I believe that if the funding is needed, the utilities and the House and the Senate will provide that.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Thank you, Representative Kelly. Okay, any other questions? See any? There's any amendments? We do have a new revised fiscal. Thank you, Representative Hawker. There's nothing else? Representative Foster?
Yes, sir. I wanted to thank Kate for coming here today. I was looking forward to her testimony. I'll go ahead and move out of Finance Committee. HCSB 157 with the revised fiscal notes and with individual recommendations. And thank you very much, Kate.
Any objections? Seeing none, the bill passes the committee. Thank you, Kate. Okay, we'll take up Municipal Harbor Facility Grants, House Bill 478 next. This is a continuation from yesterday. We have the sponsor with us and his staff. Apologize for not getting to it yesterday.
I don't have my bills.
This is a hard deal because I got my call.
Good. I'd like to take a motion to get the CS in front of Representative Schultz.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee adopt blank committee substitute for House Bill 478, version 24, LS.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Schultz.
LS 1694-I-Cook-03-1506 as a working document for the Finance Committee.
Any objections? Seeing none, we have that committee substitute before us. As I mentioned, we have the sponsor, Representative Thomas. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Representative Thomas from District 5. House Bill 478 is a companion bill to Senate Bill 291 by Senator Stedman Sitka. And The reason we've introduced this bill is that the state has been going through the process, the Department of Transportation is going through the process of transferring harbors to municipalities. They've been doing it for several years now, and several of the communities are finding out that during the process there's neither enough sufficient funds or more damage than they expected, and they are having shortfalls with trying to do the repairs that are necessary. And there is a list of some of the transfers that have happened in the back of your page here, and that's just some of them, and there's some more being transferred this year. The bill is it came about from the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters, who will be here today, and probably several on the off site here to testify. And this bill will range all the way from far southeast all the way up to Alaska, all the way around. If anybody has got a harbor, will be eligible to be using this the grant money here. This will create the Harbor Facility Grant Fund. The money that we have identified that may be used, and we say maybe because there are no dedicated funds, would be the fisheries business tax and the marine fuel tax, or other funds that you may find that you want to put in here. See, you're smiling, Kevin. So, and DOT, Department of Transportation, would administrate the grants. And the main criteria for application is that it would be a 50-50 grant match. The municipalities would have to put up 50%, and they would get 50% from the Harbor Facility Grant, which I think is a good deal. It's rather than having 100% general fund money going out to repair the harbors throughout. It makes a little commitment from the local municipalities to go out and either raise funds somehow, some way to get the match. And most communities I've talked to are in favor of this. There would be for repair or major maintenance within in the communities. It would be limited to one grant per year per facility. Some of these communities may have two or three harbors in them, but they're limited at $5 million cap for the year. And that's actually quite a bit of money. It's, you can do quite a bit of work in a harbor. And they must demonstrate the ability to operate independent of state aid in the future. And I believe several of the communities, if you've been reading the papers, at least in general, are making the adjustments to do exactly that by increasing their rates in the harbors. New construction, we have it as the lowest priority, and possibly in the future they may come on the list. But as I said, there's a list on here that's been identified already by the Harbor Masters, and three or four this year's capital project list that's going to be given out in other communities in Southeast. And that's what we're talking about later, is that we can use the future funds once, and it probably never really happened, never did the harbors maintain their, every once in a while you run into a guy who can't run a boat, and so he seems to do a lot of damage once he gets inside, like a bull in a china closet or a china, so. And I used to be like that. I never knew what it meant to slow down until I got inside the stall, and by then it hit the dock or something. So the effective date is July 1st, and my staff, Ian, here will be to identify the CS that we had adopted today, and then we'll have any questions after that.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Go ahead, sir. Thank you. My name is Ian Fisk, staff to Representative Thomas. And the CS, the change is on page 2, line 14. There's just a small grammatical change. used to say the proposed project should be, and in this case it just changes it to is, but it's just a grammatical improvement. And then on page, same page, lines 19 to 23, we inserted language which clarifies funds that municipalities can use to match the state grant. In CNRA committee, we inserted through a conceptual amendment the language that municipality money received by the municipality from the state will not be used for the matching funds, but we wanted to make sure that municipalities receive funds through the shared portion of the fisheries business tax. We wanted to be sure that they would be able to use that money because it's intended to go kind of from general needs to the communities, and it's related to harbors to begin with. And furthermore, language about the municipal revenue sharing programs that are still on the books is included in here in case those were to be funded at some point, so that those monies would be available. I think it was we kind of overstepped in CNRA by saying no state funds. We just wanted to make these exceptions, and that sums up what the CS does.
Okay, very good. Any questions? Representative Couture.
Thanks. On page 3 in the subsection B at the top, starting at line 5, you've limited it so that there can't be any other grants. If you've gotten one grant, that's it. And I had two questions. And the first one is sort of the general one, which is why limited quite so strictly. And the second one is, do you mean any grants under this program or under any programs? And if you mean it under just this program, there maybe should be a small technical amendment to just say any grants under this program. Thank you.
Yeah, did you want me to take that?
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, through the chair, Representative Curtula. I believe that what you're getting at is, you know, whether it's related to this program specifically, and that the answer is yes. So perhaps that would be worth tightening up.
All right. We'll keep that in mind as we progress along and get to amendments. I see we do have an amendment from Representative Moses already. So. Yes.
Can I also ask, though, why only one, even if it is just under this program, only one?
Through the chair, Representative Petula, we're trying to keep this tight in order to really address the deferred maintenance needs that were not properly addressed by the state at the time that the facilities were transferred. And so, and that actually leads to the issue of the definition of facility, which frankly we need to tighten up a little bit too in order to follow along with that we want to make sure that a municipality is not adding on, you know, that first we're dealing with those needs which were not properly addressed by the state at the time of transfer.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Richard Hawker.
Thank you, sir. Kind of under the same paragraphical limitation here that once you receive the grant under this program, you never get another grant, same or any other fiscal year. One shot and it's over.
Per year.
Or any other year. Or any other year.
Yeah.
I see that as here's a question, hypothetically. Legislature put some money into this program, whatever the amount is. You get grant applications in from, well, let's just hypothetically say every request on this list was submitted. And someone who has the authority to issue grants gives $100 to everyone except the facility here in Juneau, because Juneau has a very strong influence in that department. So all the rest of us go away with $100. That's the only money we can ever get out of this program, and conveniently all the rest of the money is left for Juneau. Is that a hypothetical possibility?
Capital idea.
Well, through the chair, I'm hoping that the Department of Transportation will go through by priority and need, and that people will apply. Now, it's per harbor, so you get one harbor per year. And like I said, some people have three harbors. I think Juneau might have three or four. So you can repair one harbor per year, and that hopefully that when they apply, they try to maximize the $5 million. And the people, since it's the harbor masters that put this bill together, they're understanding that it may be a few years before they get to their project, but I think that they're going to show a little patience in waiting for the money to come through to them to make sure they get enough to do the repairs. If I may, Mr. Chairman, just to point out that when they made the transfers and the state took an engineer's estimate, I'll use for example, I think it was Yakutat said they got a transfer of $1.5 million, and when they brought an engineer in after they took the transfer, I think their facility was like $2.9 million, so they really didn't get enough money, so there was a shortfall, but they already took ownership, so that's one of the reasons that this bill is here, one like that, and it happened throughout.
Follow-up? I think it's just a very short follow-up. Sure. definitely appreciate the intent there, but I'm not sure we shouldn't take a little bit more look at that language so that it is a bit more universal. I don't have a solution proposed here, but again, I think there is a potential loophole the way this is drafted for. I'll pick on Juno, but for Juno to get all the money and the rest of us get a $100 bill.
I think that's a very good point, Representative Hawker. And I would like to hear additional testimony on this bill, and we will hold it over. And if there's an amendment to be made or need some time to talk to the sponsor, we should have that. Okay, any other questions for the sponsor? Yeah, Representative.
Just out of curiosity, Representative Thomas, is this all inclusive, or
with the exception of the new ones being transferred this year? I don't know how many, and maybe the deputy commissioner can answer how many additional hardwoods are being transferred this year. I think that may end all of them, then, hopefully.
So if I look at, and I don't see Hoonah on the list, for example, is that because what?
Well, they just got theirs last year, so they may not know what the total repair should be for them.
So there may be other folks.
Right, because they just got their transfer last year, and I don't think that this list was March 2005, and so they just took transfer of the facility at the end of the last session.
Okay, so there could be others in that same shape that aren't on this. That would
through the chair, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, there's others that the deputy commissioner will identify if you have a question, but I know Haynes, Cake, and Heidelberg are three that are being transferred, and I don't know how many others are.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. House. Mr. Fisk. All right, let's go see. Juno. Here in Juno, we have John Stone. Yeah, there's John. And Mr. McKinnon, did you want to testify? Are you here for questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have the answer to
your question. Very good. So we've got the DOT expert here, so here's the question. Okay, Mr. Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the House Finance Committee. My name is John Stone, and I am the current president of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. The Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators is comprised of 27 municipal harbor systems throughout the state, from Ketchikan to Nome. We have been working on this problem for many years, and more aggressively in the past few years, and we are very, very thankful to get to this point in the legislative process. We have specifically advocated for a matching grant program. We have reviewed the bill, and we really like what we see. I think I will be here to answer questions. I have several people online that can also help with that. I will keep my testimony fairly short, pointing out that I did provide written comments. And I think the best way for me to describe why we are so interested in this bill is to show you something here that I brought with me. And I do apologize to anybody that may not be able to see this in a teleconference. But as was pointed out, the harbor infrastructure for the past several years is being transferred to the municipalities by the Department of Transportation, and most of that harbor infrastructure was built during the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, and so to a large extent it's at the end of its useful life, and this is sort of indicative of what you will find if you travel throughout these harbor systems that have been turned over. What I'm showing you here is the power cables from Harris Harbor here in Juneau that fed approximately 30 amp shore power services. And as you can see, these ones sort of toasted, but this is actually the life safety ground. It had two wires left. And so that's sort of the type of infrastructure we're dealing with. This was code at one point in time, back probably when it was put in the 60s. That was indicative of what the electrical code was. This is what we replaced it with. So that's the piece of cable that we're required to put in today. Obviously, significantly more expensive. And I think that's what's really got us here is as the harbor systems were transferred, we were given a certain amount of funding. But that funding is far, far short of what we're facing for recapitalization for these systems. And that recapitalization has come due. And so we're all struggling, trying to figure out how to recapitalize that infrastructure. With that in mind, we're very realistic, being Harbor Masters. We tried to come up with what we felt would be something that both the Department of Transportation and the legislature could live with, and that's why we proposed the 50% matching program. So that's pretty much what I have, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? I don't see any. I
will point out, if I could, through the chair, say one thing. There was a question regarding the intent, I think, of page 3, 8 through 12, with regards to the one-time grant. And I think what the Harbor Masters were putting forward was the state policy has been to turn the harbors over to the municipalities. There's no doubt about that. And I think we recognized that that's a good policy. We've operated them for a long time, and that's worked very successfully. And so what we were trying to do here was to make sure that that these grants provided on a one-time basis to rebuild that facility, that would basically be it. I mean, you'd be taken care of, and then from that point on, 30 years down the road, when it came time to rebuild it, the municipality would be responsible for it at that time. So that was what we were trying to do there. Also, we were trying to make sure there are communities that I think will probably rebuild facilities in a phased process. And so we wanted to make sure, I think, and I'm not sure if this is clear, but it should be, that communities can do that. So, for instance, if a community has a large harbor, it may want to replace a couple floats this year, a couple floats the next year, a couple floats the year after. So that was sort of what we were after there.
Okay, very good. I think the props helped, Senator Kelly.
Just a question, Mr. Stone. On the when the facilities were transferred, not before my time here, so I just don't know the answer. When they transferred, there was an amount of money that transferred to the municipality with the title, as I understand it. Was that amount estimated to accomplish a certain amount of work, or what was that supposed to accomplish?
Through the chair, Representative Kelly, I think the intent of that transfer was to make the harbors in good condition. And DOT, I think, can speak to the specific formula they used for that. What we have found is that money provided was far, far short of what it takes to actually restore the facilities. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One is what I pointed out here, just differences in codes. ADA requirements, which have made, you know, at least the manufacturing of floats and float systems much more stringent and much more precise than it used to be. And then also, I think user needs have changed too. We don't, you know, throughout the state, floats have been getting larger, which requires larger float systems. So I think the upshot was, generally speaking, throughout the state, the money that was provided was anywhere from a third to a quarter of what communities are finding out they need.
So was that wasn't then based on scope, schedule, budget on how to fix the thing? It was based on some horseback guess at what they would need, or how did we arrive at the wrong number?
Through the chair, Representative Kelly, I think DOT can best answer that. The formula, I think, was consistent throughout the communities. It was just consistently quite low. And they can talk about the formula that they used to come up with those numbers. It's just been our experience. It's been a third to a quarter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Richard Holt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on that point, was there an understanding when the transfer occurred that they were going to be, that these ports and harbors were going to be in perfect condition? Was that the understanding? Or, I mean, you're alluding, am I reading you right to say that somehow there was a mistake made on the part of the DOT in their formula, that what they were giving you was not what you thought you were getting, or what? What am I hearing here?
through the chair, Representative Holm. I don't think there was a mistake, I don't think there was any promise that the facilities would be perfect. I believe the promise was the facilities, or the money provided, would restore the facilities to good condition. And, you know, I think DOT can talk to the formula. Our experience in all the communities has been that money was far short of what we are finding out is necessary to restore the facilities to good condition. And some of that may be because really the facilities are at the end of the useful life. You know, you can't go in and do a maintenance job in something that's getting basically ready to sink. You're looking at a total replacement. DOT may have figured that, you know, a certain amount of money to restore that to good condition, but in essence, what you're looking at is a complete replacement. So that's probably one of the factors. Others, I think, are just differences in codes. I think they looked at, you know, sort of a depreciation of their original investment. That was their approach, and what we're looking at is just building new.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up on that. So am I understanding then that we're talking about scrapping the old and building new, and that this now will provide a mechanism whereby you can just build new ones when they get to an end of a life? Is that what you're trying to accomplish here?
Through the chair, Representative Holm, in a large part, I think that's in essence what will happen, although, you know, each one of the communities on that list will have a different approach. Some of them probably will try to refurbish where they can. And then probably quite a few of those will need to be replaced. So basically pull out, put in.
Okay, and if I could follow up, Mr. Chair, and who's going to be responsible for, you see, what I'm concerned with, and I think what all of us are concerned with, is if we're doing matching funds, when you put the money in, you want to make sure that whoever is doing the oversight of whether or not you're going to scrap it or whether you're going to fix it or whatever, has some kind of a formula that's better than the formula that apparently that DOT has.
Yes.
So I'm curious, do you have a formula? How are you going to make that decision, or who is going to make that decision?
I'm through the chair, Representative Holm. Most of our members, what they do is they'll hire a consulting engineer that will help them go through a planning and programming process and come up with an engineering cost estimate that would be used as a basis for a grant. And quite a few of the estimates that are on that list that you've been provided are that level of estimate. So what you're doing is you have someone in the profession that's familiar with construction costs today, and they talk to you about what your replacement need is, and then they figure out a better cost estimate than what was traditionally used, I believe, for the original transfers.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So these are engineering reports. I mean, that's, when I look on here, I see that there's engineering estimates.
Most of those are, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Thanks.
Okay, very good. Representative Cthulhu.
Thank you. And Mr. Stone, how much money a year do you think CBJ spends to do upkeep, maintenance, run the harbors? And where I'm getting at is, so how much money do you think the state is saving by having turned over the harbors to the communities?
Through the chair, Representative Petula, the operating cost for just managing the float system in Juneau for the small boat harbor system is approximately $2 million per year.
So, and that doesn't even begin to cover all of the costs, and then you'd multiply it many times out across the state. Is that right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Any other questions? We do have several other people on the line here to testify. Go ahead, Mr. Kelly.
Just a quick question on the, and I understand what you said, on the grant that came with the title, and use the example that Representative Thomas talked about, some titles are just now transferring, and that estimate to put it in reasonably good condition. When you do a complete rehab, I guess that what I want to make sure is that we're not walking down the dock doing with that grant fund that goes with the pink slip on the title. We're not doing one level, which a couple of years later we're going to have to do like repairs and completely change it out, where you've actually dumped that money in to put in whether it's new receptacles where the
cord falls out of the bottom, or all the things that happen in a Harvard. And then when you do the major rehab, which this this might envision, then that other work is lost. Is somebody watching that ball?
Through the chair, Representative Kelly, I would hope DOT would during the grant process. But, I mean, you know, I think in general most of the communities are set up enough to get a consultant on if they don't have talent within house to be able to figure out the most economic way to go about a rebuild. In some cases, that will be a complete replacement because components are at the end of their useful life and it's not economic to repair. In other cases, it may be economic to do some sort of rebuild and, you know, extend the useful life 20 years or so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Seeing no other questions, let's move on then to Kirk Reiner's. How close am I?
Pretty close, sir.
Okay, good. Sedovia. City of Sedovia. Welcome.
Thank you very much. My name is Kurt Reinertsen. I'm the city manager of Sedovia, just across the bay from Homer. And I'm am here in support of this bill. We have recently passed a resolution by the city council, which shall be arriving to our representatives in short order. When we took over the harbor, which was a couple years ago now, I believe roughly the numbers were about $2.6 million that we received from the state. Our engineer's estimate, which we are now through with the preliminary design of our harbor, is roughly $3.4 to $3.5 million. So we're about $800,000 to $900,000 short of bringing it up to good standards. While $800,000 to $900,000 may not seem like a lot of money to some people, to the city of Sedovia, it is basically insurmountable. This bill would definitely go a long ways towards helping us get our harbor back up to good operating standards. That's basically my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Representative Kelly.
So these numbers aren't additive. You have the 2.6, and the real number is 2.4. Therefore, you've got the 800,000 you're talking about. And when you got the 2.6. That'll be incorporated in the design work that you've got over here on the right hand side of this sheet that does the significant rehab work. Is that the way that's going to work?
Yeah. Well, through the chair, please, Representative Kelly. The way I understand it, the way that I understand it's going to be working, we have approximately 2.6, which the DOT will take some money off of that. Not much, but they will take some money off. Our engineering designs are coming in roughly, the preliminary design came in roughly about $50,000, and our final design will come in about another $250,000. So that's the remaining portion of the money is what we have to actually do the modifications, or excuse me, the rehab to the harbor. I don't know if that answers your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Say then, thank you very much for coming this afternoon. Okay, now we're going to go on teleconference, I believe, unless there's anyone else here in Juneau who wanted to testify. Okay, saying none.
Mr. Chairman,
is
DOT going to hold forth a little bit on the questions where they've been referred to?
Sure. We'll bring him or bring DOT up after we get to the testimony in case there's other questions that come up. Okay, Gary Heinick, manager of City of King Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gary Heinick, and I've been the city manager for King Cove, located in House District 37, for the last 15 years. King Cove is one of the coastal communities in southwest Alaska that is fortunate enough to have a modest economic base due to its location adjacent to the Gulf and the Bering Sea. First, we wish to applaud all of the state's elected officials who are supporting the need and funding logic in House Bill 478 and its companion bill in the Senate. And we also want to continue kudos to the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators for their steadfast advocacy on this topic. House Bill 478 is a good bill whose time has come for King Cove and at least 21 other coastal communities that previously accepted ownership transfers of marine facilities from the state. King Cove was one of the very first, and back in the early 90s, we proudly accepted it because we thought it was the right thing to do. We could financially handle it, but it certainly has not turned out as we expected. Good news is that in King Cove, we've become a lot smarter in the last 10 years and can now easily tell you just how bad this deal has turned into. Bad news is that our most important marine infrastructure in King Cove, which is our first and still most utilized boat harbor, is now in deplorable condition. And adding to this dilemma is that about 80% of the fleet that uses this harbor are our local residents, and they are becoming increasingly vocal about this situation. Something needs to be done. Dedicating funding from the state's watercraft fuel tax and fisheries business tax makes solid financial sense and connectivity to this bill. Just in little old King Cove alone in the last decade, somewhere between $4 and $5 million have been paid into these two revenue sources from our local and transient fishermen. And to now have the prospect of some return on this amount coming back to meet this urgent need in King Cove makes an impressive statement about the financial linkages between state and local governments working together. Finally, King Cove has two suggestions for the legislation. On page 2, lines 17 and 18, the comment about the monies received by the municipality from the state will not be used for the matching funds. We disagree with that and would like to suggest that state revenue funds received in the name of either revenue sharing or municipal assistance or a community dividend bill or a legislative grant should be allowed to use as a match. We contend the logic is pretty straightforward in that these sources of municipal funding would likely come from revenue sources exclusively or predominantly driven by the oil and gas revenues that elsewhere in the state people get to experience. We would also respectfully suggest on page 3, lines 1 and 2, that adding a provision that would allow those communities who first accepted these deals and those of us who were either smart enough or dumb enough to do it well over 10 years ago, if we can have a small head start in applying for these funds, and we're suggesting that this could be addressed by maybe adding a provision that allows some portion of the funding in the first 2 years to be set aside for those communities who took the bait well over 10 years ago and now are really struggling. I'd also like to add one comment that back in the early 90s, I can assure you that there was no formula that DOT was using in terms of helping at least we in King Cove evaluate what at that time seemed like a pretty okay deal to bring that boat harbor up to reasonable standards. It was never expected to make it perfect, and it wasn't expected to make it anything more than it had ever been, but to bring it up to reasonable standards. And the paltry sum of $352,000 that we received back in the early 90s was simply, in retrospect, just not even in the ballpark of a legitimate contribution. So with that, I thank you for your time.
All right, Gary, thank you for testifying. Representative Kelly, do you have a question?
Just a quick question, Mr. Chairman. I know the three areas I'm familiar with, Hoonah, Juneau, and Valdez, have all experienced significant fee increases for their harbors. Would ask the gentleman what the situation is, what sort of percentage increase you've seen in your community.
In the 15 years that I've been King Cove City Manager, our fee for moorage has increased only by about 25%. I would be the first to say that we need to have another local fee increase. And when the time is right, I am sure that the residents, particularly the fishermen of King Cove, will agree. The immediate dilemma is they're saying, you're asking us to pay more for a harbor that's falling apart. and that is indeed the challenge that the elected officials and I as their appointed official are struggling with, but we know our residents well enough to know that they will do their part as soon as we can assure them that they're going to see some improvements in the infrastructure that they very desperately need.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow on, how many folks on your waiting list, and then just to comment, most of the other areas that have had to get on with raising their rates well before there was even a promise of improvement, but how many folks on your waiting list for SLIPS?
There's no waiting list for a place like King Cove. Simply because unless you're a commercial fisherman and you have reason to be out in that part of the world, you're not going to be out there because it's very expensive to get there. It's very expensive to survive out there. So there is no waiting list for either of the two boat harbors that we have in King Cove. But we do have, for the size of the community, which is 800 people, probably one of the busiest per capita waterfronts any place in the state. It's just out in the Aleutians in Alaska Peninsula. We sort of get lost in the crowd because there's Unalaska to the west of us and Kodiak to the east of us. But we are truly the largest per capita fish producing area in that part of the state and perhaps even the whole state.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Kelly. And thank you, Gary, for your testimony.
Thank you.
I think, in all fairness here, we're definitely not going to get to House Bill 176. That's the daylight savings time. And it's very doubtful we'll get to 271. In fact, I can pretty much say we won't get to House Bill 271. I know there's a lot of people online to testify for that, and there's some people here in the audience. But we do need to get to the operating budget here at 4 o'clock. We're going to start that, and I want to give everybody a little bit of a break. We still have quite a few people to go through on this bill. So let's just continue with the harbors for today, and we'll take up those other two items when we can. Okay, Greg Messner with the City of Wrangell. Greg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of the comments I have to make have already been addressed a little bit, and I guess one of my concerns is on page 3, line 9, it talks about, which you guys have covered a couple of times, about once a facility has gotten money from this grant, it would not be, that facility would not be able to get money again. My assumption is this bill is intended for each float to get its share of money to bring itself up to par. And when it says facility, that I'm not sure if that means downtown Wrangell. We've got two basins right now and a third one with our Heritage Harbor, which is out of this picture, but inside those two basins we have five different float facilities. And my guess is each float would become a facility, and like John Stone mentioned a little while ago, to do them one at a time makes more sense when the real need is there. And when you pick a small float and have to move 50 boats or so somewhere, you couldn't do all these facilities at once. So is it fair to suggest that each float would be a facility? So if I did one a couple of years out, I could do another one a couple of years later in that same basin, although each float's about a third of a mile apart from each other. Am I correct to assume that?
I think you're asking the wrong person. Why don't you just continue with your testimony, then the sponsor can come back up later and answer your question.
Okay, thank you. And line 16 on the same page talks about new construction having the lowest priority. New construction, I don't mean new construction as in our brand new boat harbor going in, but one of our floats is an old concrete float, and a replacement cost would be somewhere around $5 to $6 million, and the estimated repairs on it right now are about $2.5 to $3 million. So my concern would be to not rather put $2.5 to $3 million, which is approximately 50% of a new facility price, into this old system that might get you 10 to 15 more years, but rather be able to acquire the funds to spend more wisely and put a new one in and get another 40 years out of it. So them are my two concerns, I guess. And again, thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chris, did you want to attempt to answer his question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meisner, first of all, your first point in reference to the kind of the definition of facility is a good one that we will be working with DOT to address, because as Mr. Stone mentioned earlier, it makes sense to do, you know, to give a municipality the flexibility to work on a, you know, to not have to do an entire harbor at once, but to work float by float or in parts of the overall harbor facility. So we'll work to tighten up that definition. As far as the, I'm not sure I exactly understand your concern with the second question. We'd certainly be glad to talk to you before we bring this bill back to the committee again.
Okay. Yeah, I think.
All right, thank you.
Did you have Mr. Messner's phone number? Maybe?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's go on to Valerie McCandless, manager of City of Wrangell.
I'm Valerie McCandless, and I'm the mayor of Wrangell, Alaska, and I'm here today to express my thanks to each of you for your work on this bill. It's important not only to Wrangell, but to all of the coastal communities, and we are very appreciative that it's being addressed during this legislative session. We will continue to follow what's happening, and I'm also happy to hear that you are looking at addressing doing smaller sections at a time rather than an entire harbor area at one time, because we need to move boats in order to, we need a place where we can move existing boats as we're doing that work.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Valerie. All right, going on to Alan Sorum, City of Valdez.
Good afternoon, Chairman and Committee. This is Alan Sorum, the Port Director, Harbor Master for the City of Valdez. I'm the immediate past president of the Alaska Harbor Masters Association, and I've been quite involved with this issue over the years, and I really appreciate the support we've gotten on House Bill 478. Not to be out of line, but I'm a harbor master, so that's fairly normal for the course, but I did hear mention of Fairbanks Harbor in the background, and I think Fairbanks Harbor is right down here in Valdez. About half our permanent boaters are actually residents of the greater Fairbanks area. We certainly offer the closest access to the salt water for most of the interior residents. Probably 75% of our transient boaters in the summertime are from the interior. I'd just like to voice my support for working with the Department of Transportation. They've always been really good to work with through the grant process, working through projects. They've got a real good handle on how to deal with harbor projects, and I think that's part of the reason this bill looks so attractive. And I definitely appreciate the support, and I'm just going to be standing by here for questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, and I don't see any questions time. Okay, Scott Ransom.
Yeah, good afternoon. Scott Ransom, Harbor Master of the City of Seward, and just to echo what everyone has said here, just appreciate the fact that this bill is before this committee and appreciate the committee's time. We're like many other harbors. We took ownership of our harbor in 99 for $3.1 million, and we presently have over $6 million in deferred maintenance. And this is for the floats that were, these are the oldest floats in the harbor that were installed in after the earthquake. We do have passed two rate increases this year, and our city council and all of our commercial fleet voters' pleasure are in support of this. And we too have passed a resolution in support of this bill. And again, thank you. And this will be a big help for our harbors in dealing with our deferred maintenance. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the testimony. Okay. Let's go on now to Ray Machewski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Ray Machewski. I'm the harbor master in Sitka, Alaska. I'm also a past president of the Alaska Harbor Masters Association, and currently the Vice President of the Pacific Coast Congress of Harbor Masters. The City of Sitka took over three harbors, Crescent Harbor, Sealing Cove Harbor and Thompson Harbor as part of the takeover from the state-owned harbors. $4.4 million was allocated for this particular takeover, and after doing so, we discovered, or even during the process before it was finally finished, we discovered that Thompson Harbor was not a repairable harbor. Thompson Harbor needed to be replaced. It had literally outlived its useful time. The replacement of Thompson Harbor is set forth by the engineering estimates of Bradovich, Nottingham, and Drage and Juneau was at $6.7 million. We expended approximately $3 million of the $4.4 million between Crescent Harbor and Sealing Cove. And that left a remaining $1 million for Thompson Harbor. And with the $6.7 million price tag, you can see how short we are of the monies necessary to replace this harbor. We bought approximately 15 years more life to Crescent Harbor, and we believe that we have at least that much, if not more, in Sealing Cove. But Thompson Harbor had no opportunity to be repaired. It was far too rotten and far too gone for us to go ahead and repair. It would be throwing good money after bad, I guess. So you can see how short we are, but one concern that I have in the bill is regarding the statement that grant applications must be filed during the immediately preceding fiscal year before February the 1st. We are currently in the process of replacing Thompson Harbor. We just went out for bid a few weeks ago. The bids came in this past week, and we hope to start construction by mid-August of this year. And I would hope that this bill, if passed, will cover what we're in the process of doing to help defray some of the costs of that, because we have raised our moorage rates more than 100% in the past 6 years, and we are continuing to look at raising them up further. But in order to take that particular jolt away from the average boat user and commercial vessel owner here in Sitka, this help that is provided by this bill would be really wonderful for us and allow us the opportunity to at least raise our rates and everything at a more acceptable level rather than raising them through the roof overnight. So there's consideration for these for this particular harbor system and for those of us that are already in the process of repairing and replacing the harbors taken over from the state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Ray, for your testimony. Don't see any questions. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Okay, was there anybody online? Anybody else online that I've missed? Okay. Anybody else here in Juneau that wanted to testify on this? Okay. Mr. McKinnon, if you would come up here. I think Representative Kelly had a question or two for you, and we'll go ahead and take questions. We'll close the public testimony, and as I said, we'll hold this over to give members a chance to work with the sponsor on some of the issues that have come up today. Representative Kelly, are you prepared to with your questions?
Yes. Good afternoon, John. Just kind of trying to get a handle on what was intended with the amount of the funds. I know they had you know, the carrot out here, and then they said that you go to the bottom of the list if you don't buy the carrot. So I mean, they had them in with a squeeze. So what was the attempt on the dollars? I mean, these guys are all saying that the dollars missed, and if you look at the harbors, you probably have to agree with them. What happened there?
For the record, John McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner of Transportation for Highways and Facilities, which includes harbors. What I understand happened on that, and most of the harbors that you've heard testimony on that were, quote, underfunded, for lack of a better term, were part of the November 2002 statewide bond issue. And in that bond issue, there was about $30 million allocated to 10 communities and approximately 26 different facilities in those 10 communities. The numbers that were used for that bond issue, for the totals in that bond issue and for the various allocations, came from a 1992 Corps of Engineers condition survey of all of the boat harbor facilities in Alaska. And in the spring of 02, when that bond issue package was being put together, the department was asked at that time to come up with a cost of a list of harbors that could be transferred and deferred maintenance amounts. So our harbor engineer at the time, Harold Mosier, took those numbers in the 1992 study and adjusted them for inflation and adjusted them for additional deferred maintenance over that 10-year period. So there was a double adjustment in there. I don't know. I haven't looked at the numbers, and I couldn't say one way or another whether his numbers were accurate or not. What I would say in defense of what he did was the level at which he was looking at bringing them up to was not the level of upgrade that was desired by a lot of the communities, and I think that's a big difference. You know, you heard John Stone mention that there are changes in codes that have caused increased costs for these harbor upgrades. But I think more importantly, there are changes in user needs. You've got a lot more little boards on these harbors that are plugged into the water, plugged into the power. They don't plug into the sewer there. That happens every time the tide changes. And also the community expectations of these harbors. 30 years ago, these were working harbors. Now they're a lot more pleasure harbors. You don't want creosote on the floats because they get on the white fiberglass boats. So there are a lot of other changes that are reflected in the community needs and expectations of these harbors that were probably not reflected in the estimates of what we thought it would take to bring them up to a standard. We are talking to a large extent different standards, Representative Kelly, and I think a good illustration of that here in Juneau is to go over to the Douglas Boat Harbor. The south half of the harbor are the old floats, and the north half of the harbor are the new floats. Very big difference between the two. And that's a large extent the difference between the numbers we were presenting to the legislature and putting that bond issue package together and the numbers that the consultants today are coming up with.
Did we think we'd be done with these folks when the deal was done, or?
Representative Kelly, through the chair, 3 years ago when I came on board and we were starting to transfer these harbors, it didn't take long to realize that some of them were going to be difficult to do because they're just, and I won't call it a difference of opinion, but a difference of expectation of what they thought they were going to get and what we were planning to give them. Some were very difficult to transfer. I know in one of Representative Hawker's district, the Whittier Boat Harbor, it was like pulling teeth to get that one transferred. On the other hand, every harbor we dealt with, the harbor masters would say, you know, if we take these over and do the improvements we need to, we're going to have to raise rates in order to pay for the improvements. It's nice when you don't have to raise rates, but, you know, we have to start paying for the services we get in many of these areas, and boat harbors are one of them.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Kelly. Anybody else for Mr. McKinnon?
Chief, if I'm...
Go ahead, Representative Hawker.
Mike, Mr. Chair, as of yesterday, I took the risk of crossing swords with you on one of your bills that you liked or didn't like. I've got to also cross swords with my own constituency in having spent a great deal of time with Department of Transportation on the transfer of the harbor at Whittier. In this case, there's a great deal of merit to the Department of Transportation's position. I just went down to my office and grabbed the relevant documents. It's pretty clear that on these transfers, I mean, the end was the end. I mean, we've got the bill of sales, we've got the transfer agreements that very clearly say there shall be no state responsibility subsequent to your assuming the asset in a whereas-as-is condition plus the money we've offered you. That said, there is still a very, very significant need in these facilities. The money was sort of an offer, and I quote the letter from Bob Norton back in 2002. We were providing money that was required to bring the harbor to good condition, not new condition. Good as some sort of a relative estimate there.
We need harbors that are in excellent condition in this state. We don't need good harbors, we need excellent harbors, which is where I'm a little bit conflicted over the whole bill that's before us here, because it's, I think somewhere, I think there, well, I guess it's, I'm conflicted multiple ways. One, there was a policy decision made before I joined this body that said the state was to divest itself of harbors and they would become a local responsibility. I'm not sure I would agree completely with that conclusion, but that had been reached. But it is an absolute statement of fact, and I believe it is an objective statement of fact that harbors across the state are in definite need of maintenance money, but I have a little bit of a hard time buying into the argument that we still owe them because of the transfer agreements. So I applaud the, I recognize the problem, will advocate for my constituency on putting money into harbors. I'm not so sure that somehow linking it to completing a deal that was formally committed is an appropriate argument.
Very good. Good point, Mr. Hawker. Any other questions, comments for Mr. Kennan? President Kelly, go ahead.
Just one thing, John. You listened to the exchange on the one project, this basin. Everyone that deals with boats knows that the poor harbor master can't redo more than a certain percentage because he's got to stick them somewhere. And if we don't want to be back again looking at this because somebody's stuck in that basin gap or the problem that the harbor master would have, how do you fix that?
Through the chair, Representative Kelly, I think we would look at maybe a slight language change that would in definition of facility, we would either go to facility or portion thereof. A smaller community with a large boat harbor might be able to finance doing three fingers a year over 3 years. So we would define that as three separate facility improvements. So they would be able to do three fingers and the next year come do the next three.
So it,
the next
lock
three.
Them out.
It would not lock them out, no. I think the intent on all this is that once those three fingers are done, it's their responsibility to collect adequate fees and perform adequate maintenance so that they're not coming back to the state in 15 or 20 years saying, we let our facility go and we need to replace it. Help us. The communities need to take on some of the responsibility, and as hard as it is, pass those costs on to the users of the facility.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Kelly. Okay. If there's no other questions for Mr. McKinnon, then I think we'll set this bill aside for the time being. As I mentioned, public testimony is closed. We will next time take up any amendments that you may have. So with that, that'll conclude our business for, at least for now. Representative Chenault wants to get started on the operating budget at 4 o'clock sharp, right?
That's good, Mr. Speaker, Jim.
Okay, so we'll do we want to adjourn or just head east? Okay, we're going to go ahead and adjourn and reconvene at 4 o'clock.
How do you want to do that?
Get a donut, Mr. Operating, so I'm happy.